In proportion as the structure of a government gives force to public opinion, it is essential that public opinion should be enlightened.
We are a nation generated by ideas, the beneficiaries of people who took terrific risks and who were a fount, if you will, of originality and ingenuity.
So if people have views that you find offensive, we can either silence them so that nobody challenges us for 4 years, or we can welcome them, debate with them, and try to hash it out and make us all smarter.
We've talked about conspiracy theories before on the podcast because there have definitely been, I think there's been a lot of conspiracy theories dominating news cycles recently, including things like Epstein didn't kill himself. There have been theories first that Obama wasn't going to relinquish office when he when he left office and after the 2016 election. Then there are now conspiracy theories that Trump won't leave office if he loses the election, which is seeming more and more likely, though we're 2 months out and anything could happen, I guess. But one that's really gained a lot of attention recently is the QAnon conspiracy. It started on 4chan, but is actually starting to shape social discourse, which is a really bizarre thing to think about. It was actually brought up to President Trump a couple of weeks ago, and he was asked about his views on QAnon, and he said, I understand they like me very much, which I appreciate it. I have heard that it is gaining in popularity, and from what I hear, these are people that love our country. And then when it was explained to him what QAnon is, which, and we'll go into it a little bit later, but basically at its heart, QAnon is the idea that Trump is a superhero saving the world from a cult of pedophiles and cannibals and elites who are both pedophiles and cannibals, and Trump is our only hope. And when this was explained to him, he said, well, I haven't heard that, but is that supposed to be a bad thing? And so QAnon is getting a lot of attention, and it's a particularly, I don't know if I can say it's a particularly insidious conspiracy theory, but I think it's a particularly strong one, I guess, in the sense of it's not just being promoted through memes like Epstein didn't kill himself. It's being promoted through people actually believing it, and it is becoming its own movement, and it is starting to affect politics. Now, since I don't actually study the psychology of conspiracy theories, I opted to bring on another psychologist who does study conspiracy theories. In fact, that is her primary area of research, at least on the academic level. Her name is Marie Alt-Gilbers, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories today. So, Marie, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aaron.
So your research does intersect with conspiracy theories. What is it precisely about conspiracy theories that you study as a psychologist?
So within the area of conspiracy theory research, my main interest is actually looking at ways that we can mitigate conspiracy theory endorsement. So I'm interested in once people have kind of absorbed and integrated conspiracy theories into their worldview, they believe these conspiracy theories, is there a way that we can convince them that they're wrong, that they don't have all the information, and there's other information that shows that things aren't quite the way that they think they look, aren't quite as simple as some of the conspiracy theories they believe make them look.
Okay, so how would you define a conspiracy theory? Because when we talked about this on the podcast last time, we talked about it with Austin, who's a lawyer, and we basically made the differentiation between conspiracy theory and conspiracy fact. So, and I know this is part of the literature from what I've read on it, you know, MKUltra was considered a conspiracy theory for a long time, and then we realized it actually happened. The idea that the government was spying on you would have been considered absurd and a fringe conspiracy theory, and then Edward Snowden happened. And so it seems there's a bit of a continuum as to what counts as a conspiracy theory. Certainly in political discourse, it's often used as an insult know you're a conspiracy theorist, but I'm assuming there's a more concrete, stable definition and operationalization that you'd use to study it. So psychologically speaking, how do you define conspiracy theories?
So you make a really good point, actually, with the distinction between conspiracy theory and conspiracy fact. And to an extent, I'd say that's not completely settled in the literature. And so the approach that a lot of researchers take is to say that a conspiracy theory can't be confirmed or disconfirmed necessarily in the moment, but if there's not a preponderance of evidence that suggests that it's not correct, then it's a conspiracy theory. And so we do have conspiracy theories that have become conspiracy facts. They're just conspiracies. So like you mentioned, MK Ultra, Watergate started off as a conspiracy theory, Iran-Contra, the NSA, you know, those used to be kind of fringe ideas, and then we find that they're actually true. So that does muddy the waters a little bit. But when we're talking strictly psychologically about how we define and study conspiracy theories, there's a couple of core characteristics that we look at. So a conspiracy theory involves a powerful, malevolent actor. That's really one of the core components, is there's some powerful, malevolent actor who is conspiring in secret to commit some sort of evil deeds, basically. And so you've got like the government, you have big corporations, the Jews, all of these groups that are kind of scapegoated in conspiracy theories. And so that's really the core definition, is that there's this powerful actor who is doing bad things in secret. And then the people that believe these conspiracy theories believe that they have figured out the truth, basically. They've realized that these people are working to screw other people over. And so there's kind of almost this like in-group, out-group mentality that you see sometimes. Like it's the government or the Jews trying to screw over my group.
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with that last one, but... So you mentioned that conspiracy theories are things that can't be substantiated or contradicted in the moment. But what about things that, say, rely on secret knowledge or rely on plausibility? So, for instance, there may not have been direct evidence of a lot of government wrongdoing until facts were actually broken by the media. So I'm thinking, say, of the NSA and Snowden, or the idea that was really popular online for a very long time before it was confirmed that, you know, the chiefs of staff and the military leaders had no freaking clue what they were doing in Afghanistan. They were lying to people, to the public. And, you know, there was a lot of hearsay, quote unquote. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence, I guess you could call it. But there's no real way to disprove it, because a lot of the argument rested on they've done this before and they'll do it again. So for instance, in discussions of how President Trump treats minorities, and really just even more broadly going beyond Trump, our terrible immigration policy, one might look back to the internment of Japanese Americans, one might look back to a lot of the racialized plots that came about in the wake of emancipation and the end of the Civil War that involved government actors, and say, okay, well, I don't have any direct proof that this is what's going on, but it matches with my expectation of reality, and it's happened before, and it wouldn't surprise me. How does something like that score, I guess, as a conspiracy theory? And are there degrees of conspiracy theory kind of along those lines in terms of how well-reasoned they are, amount of even plausibility or anecdotal evidence that support them, etc.?
So the issue of the lack of falsifiability is something else that is sometimes considered crucial to considering conspiracy theories. And so you look at like anti-vax conspiracy theories, and there's no evidence that Big Pharma is trying to make people sick with vaccines, but you can't definitively say that they're not because you don't have access to all of the internal information in these corporations, for example. So yeah, you can't falsify it. And that is kind of why some of these conspiracy theories thrive, is because you can't definitively say, I have seen every single memo and I have heard all of these conversations and I know that they are not conspiring against us, you know? And so yeah, that is an issue that makes conspiracy theories more tenable to some people. In terms of plausibility, I would argue that there's kind of a continuum where there are some conspiracy theories that are pretty plausible and we just don't have evidence yet. I kind of come down more on the side that Epstein, maybe he did kill himself, but there's something shady there. So I would consider that more plausible. But then you have on the other side, like lizard people and UFOs. Area 51 is definitely concealing all sorts of information about alien contact, and there are aliens being kept there. You know, to me, those seem a lot more ridiculous. And I think the consensus in the field is that there's some that are a lot more ridiculous like that, and then some that are kind of in that gray area in terms of plausibility.
So would you say for the spectrum that even if there's no falsifiability yet, there might be such a thing as a good conspiracy theory, and that, you know what you'd need to find in order to demonstrate it, as opposed to, well, you can't prove it didn't happen. So like the example would be, and this would be a couple years ago now, but I don't have proof that our government is lying to us about the hideous lack of planning in Afghanistan. But there seems to be indicators, and if I can just find, you know, those memos, or I can interview the right people and get them to talk to me, I can find evidence. As opposed to, I choose to believe lizard people are real and you can't prove that lizard people aren't real, or, you know, the Illuminati, all these things based totally, totally on facts, so-called, that are utterly divorced from reality, and then saying, well, you can't prove that it's not. Would you say that's kind of the way to differentiate a good or at least a useful conspiracy theory from a bad or harmful conspiracy theory? Or is it more nuanced than that? Is there even such a thing as a good conspiracy theory?
So if you really look at very specific conspiracy theories in isolation, you could maybe argue that some of them are these good conspiracy theories because they make you think about things. But when you think about from a psychological perspective, conspiracy theories, what they look like in practice, I would argue that there's really not so much of a thing as a good conspiracy theory, just because when we study them, what we see in most cases is that people don't seek the standard of falsifiability. You could go and say, this is the kind of evidence I need to prove that the Bush administration had no idea what was happening with Iraq and Afghanistan. You could do that, but people don't do that for the most part. What you see instead is that if one part of the conspiracy theory is proved untenable, if it's not holding up against the weight of the evidence, people will bring in more things, more ideas to say, well, this is why everybody says that I'm wrong. And it's because they're in on it too. They're working with the Jews or whatever. They're working with the government. I thought maybe you might think that some of these are funny.
I do.
That's really what you see in practice. And while in some cases you might see that they, some of the more, I guess, tame conspiracy theories induce this sort of rational skepticism. For the most part, that's not really what you see. And so the possible outcome of rational skepticism is outweighed by these consequences, like decreased trust in government institutions, for example. This is a huge consequence that has drawn a fair bit of attention from scholars in the field. You might argue, knowing some of your political viewpoints, that would be a good thing. But there have been studies that show that once you've been exposed to these conspiracy theories about, say, one part of the government, your trust in completely unrelated, much less political institutions is also reduced. So like the Bureau of Labor Statistics was a particular example. They're like relatively apolitical, I'd say. They report numbers.
Yeah.
There's some debate as to if these reporting methods are the best in terms of who's classified as unemployed. But the numbers are the numbers, you know. There's not a whole lot of, I'm going to change the numbers because my administration doesn't like them going on. And so you'll see trust in these kind of government institutions decreased, even though they're not associated with the more overtly political departments in the government, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and while I don't necessarily trust the government, I would say that I don't necessarily, I mean, I've been accused of believing in conspiracy theories, but ironically, a lot of the time, these are not conspiracy theories, it's more just, it's not generally well known, which I guess sounds like a rationalization, but a lot of people don't know that MKUltra was real, for example. A lot of people conveniently like to forget that things like the Tuskegee experiments occurred with government oversight, approval, and funding even. There are tangible things that I think can erode one's trust in the government, and I think that's, while I see, I'm trying to self-monitor so I don't sound like a conspiracy theorist, but for instance, I generally don't trust a single word that comes out of the president's mouth. And it's not because I have proof every single time that he's lying, but there can be, you know, indicators like, okay, one, he's notorious for misrepresenting facts. He's notorious for making it plain he has no idea what he's talking about. And so I'm like looking at a pattern of behavior here and a pattern of concrete outcomes. I do not trust him on X, Y, and Z. It's the same way, like, I don't think you could say it's a conspiracy theory that most rational people are, or at least shouldn't, maybe they are, but they shouldn't take campaign promises especially seriously. Now, yeah, I can't prove that every single candidate is lying, but at this point, it's such a long pattern of behavior that for me, the burden of proof lies on them to prove that they're actually going to do anything that they talk about. You know, like President Trump pardoning a bunch of people the other day, but then having just executed a ton of people for federal crimes and refusing to pardon them, I don't think it gets a conspiracy to say I don't think he cares that much about criminal justice reform. And I don't think you need to generalize it that broadly. I use Bureau of Labor Statistics, but the Bureau of Justice Statistics in my own research, for example. I don't think I need to be skeptical of those numbers because they're just plain facts. Now, when I read a report from the government, especially, shall we say, anything to do with criminal justice, like, oh, we investigated ourselves and no wrongdoing was found, there I'm not saying, oh, I know they're lying because of secret cabals and claims. I would just say I think they're probably lying because of the clear pressures of the situation and an overwhelming pattern of behavior. So I don't think you need to go to conspiracy theories and the lizard people. And yes, as you mentioned, I do find it funny how often we Jews get blamed for everything, because I've yet to receive my cut of any of the conspiracies that we supposedly do. And maybe my invitation to the meeting just got lost in the mail. Who knows? But this seems like as good an opportunity as any to bring up, because you mentioned, you know, you're not sure that there's such a thing as a good conspiracy theory, but there definitely seem to be ones that are worse than others. Like, technically, yes, Epstein didn't kill himself is a conspiracy theory, but it seems moderately harmless in the sense that most people aren't there going, oh, yeah, there's lizard people wanting him, who wanted him dead. They're more going, eh, something seems fishy. But QAnon is just, I mean, I think the phrase that was used when we talked about Epstein not killing himself was this theory has legs. And if Epstein didn't kill himself has legs, QAnon seems to have like evolved legs, wings, and a tail that can propel it through water or something. I don't know. It's a powerful conspiracy theory. So first off, let's just define a little bit. What is QAnon? What do they believe? And why, in your opinion, assuming you agree with me, are they representative of the worst or some of the worst things you can see in conspiracy theories?
So QAnon, it's a conspiracy theory that hasn't been around that long, honestly. It started on 4chan in like 2017. And right, so that already, it's interesting. We'll put it that way. And they started on 4chan, and then they got too crazy for 4chan and moved over to 8chan. So I think that tells you a little bit about what these people think already, just knowing that they were too much for 4chan.
I mean, I tease you a lot about being a lot younger than me, but I did not know there was an 8chan. What kind of Zoomer nonsense is this?
I have to confess that I have not frequented 8chan. And so I can't say with 100% certainty, but my impression is that if 4chan is like the cesspool of the internet, 8chan is like a concentrated version of that, where all of the solids kind of precipitate out. And so it's just like all of the crap. It's even worse. Essentially.
Even worse than 4chan seems scary to me.
And that's why I don't go there, despite my academic interest. It's like that seems a bit much. But yeah, so that, as far as I know, is one of QAnon's current major homes is still on 8chan. And they kind of came out of the Pizzagate conspiracy theory. For anyone that might have missed this or might not recall, the Pizzagate conspiracy theory popped up around the 2016 election. And the allegation was that a bunch of top-ranking Democratic officials, especially connected to Hillary Clinton's campaign and Hillary Clinton herself, were running a child trafficking, like pedophile sex ring, out of a pizza parlor in, I believe it was Washington, D.C. That's the whole thing. They were running a child trafficking ring out of the basement of a pizza parlor. To be clear, this has been disproven. There was no child trafficking in this pizza parlor.
It doesn't stop people, though. I mean, even this week, I've seen some stuff online posted by, unfortunately, people I have yet to delete from my Facebook, but like, outrage. Because I mean, and admittedly, child trafficking is, I'm not trying to downplay that child trafficking is a problem. I am glad that there's so much attention being paid to it in the last couple of weeks. we're probably at about a month now, and that's great. But like, somebody, I think it was Target, that was selling a onesie or like a toddler's shirt or something that had a slice of pizza on it, and they were just going absolutely bananas over this on Facebook, going, oh, this is proof, you know, this is a way to mark a child for, I don't know, abduction in this sex cult or something. So Pizzagate still seems to be a thing. I thought it would have died with the election. I thought it should have died before the election. I thought it shouldn't have gone anywhere, but it still seems to be out there.
Yeah, so again, despite the fact that we have a preponderance of evidence that suggests that Pizzagate is not legitimate, we still have people that are kind of on this train. But Pizzagate was kind of the precursor to QAnon. That's kind of where things really started picking up steam. I saw that there was a poll done just a couple months ago that asked people if they'd heard of QAnon. And I think it was 79% of respondents said no. But strictly speaking, that's probably not true. They might not recognize the QAnon label, but there is terminology from QAnon that has made its way into common discourse. And so when we talk about the deep state, that's QAnon is kind of where this term originated. And you hear that all the time. You hear Trump talking about the deep state. That's something that's used a lot in QAnon conspiracy theories. So basically the idea, as I think you said before, is that Trump is this like godlike figure in America who has come to do battle with the forces of evil, George Soros and the liberal elites. And he is working to root out the deep state and usher in this new era of prosperity, basically. Some people believe that Trump is Q. I'm pretty sure that we know this isn't the case, considering he at least claims to have no idea who they are. And knowing Trump's pattern of behavior and speech, it may be true that he has no freaking idea. But Q is one of the main posters involved in this conspiracy theory. That's their handle. Was their handle on 4chan and on 8chan is Q, which is a specific level of security clearance in like the Department of Energy, I think, is where they got this name. And Q claims to have this insider information about the government and how like completely rotten it is, and it's been infiltrated by the deep state, and is supposed to be marshaling his forces to help Trump in this takeover of the government, so that he can finally drain the swamp, essentially.
So QAnon's definitely, I mean, you mentioned things like the deep state and the ongoing Pizzagate's conspiracy, but I know that they've also gotten a lot more influence, and that just, even though people may not recognize the label of QAnon, a lot of their predictions and beliefs tend to make their way into popular discourse, such as, say, the idea that there's a war coming. I know it's a very pop, I think they call it the storm or something like that, where they're all going to get arrested and locked up and subjected to military tribunals, etc. And to be fair, I mean, the government has done that before, say, with the McCarthy trials. There's just a level of implausibility to the specificity of the QAnon predictions. They've also made a lot of specific predictions and elaborations of conspiracy theories that just seem wildly implausible. So they consistently predict that, for example, they said that there would be a nationwide riot on October 30th, 2017, because Clinton was actually going to get arrested, and that didn't happen. There have been elaborations of conspiracy theories like, I mean, we all at least, I mean, I do. I don't know if Americans really do this as much, but with an Australian mother, like, I definitely know there are conspiracy theories about Princess Diana's death. And so that's been linked to 9/11 by QAnon, and it became kind of popular. And as you mentioned, all sorts of supposed insiders who routinely get demonstrated not to be actual insiders, like things with, you know, oh, we know this mass shooting is a false flag. And it almost seems like QAnon is this nice umbrella that encompasses and propagates like every conspiracy theory you can think of, like false flag operations for mass shootings, accusations of malfeasance on the government's part, where incompetence would just be so much more of a simple attributable cause. But, you know, there have been weird conspiracy theories before. There have been very popular conspiracy theories before. I mean, we mentioned the McCarthy trials. I mean, that was, while yes, we know that people like Elker Hiss were actually communist agents working for the USSR, we know that they did have sleeper agents here. That got revealed after the wall fell. The level of conspiracy about communist intervention was definitely overplayed. So we've seen these things before, but what makes QAnon different, or at the very least maybe similar to McCarthy-level conspiracy theories? Why is it not just going the way of other internet conspiracies like lizard people existing or flat Earth? You know, things that have a nice small little cabal that are really annoying to deal with on social media, but otherwise don't affect our lives. What makes QAnon different? What makes it more insidious? How is it more popular, and how does that manifest?
So, as far as how it is more popular, I'm honestly not 100% sure, but I have a couple of conjectures. Because that's one of those things that I'm sure people picked up and saw on 4chan or whatever, and they're like, haha, look at how stupid this is. That helps circulate it, right? But that's not really how it's going to acquire the majority of its adherents, I don't think. So from a psychological perspective, I think there are still a couple of question marks as to how people actually acquire and incorporate conspiracy theories into their worldviews. But in particular, one of the things to note about QAnon is that it is exclusively the purview of the far right. This is like an alt-right conspiracy theory. And this is kind of an issue just because of the nature of the alt-right, in part, I think. The FBI earlier this year started designating these kind of alt-right groups as domestic terror organizations, which they've been loath to do in the past, I guess because that's not a good look. It's kind of, there are already people who are sort of radicalized or more vulnerable to radicalization. And then they pick up this QAnon conspiracy theory, and then it allows for all sorts of like scapegoating, and this is why my life sucks. And in addition, it is really tied up with the politics of the time. It's not the same as flat Earth conspiracy theories, because, you know, people think that scientists are lying to us about the world being round. Okay, so what are you going to do about that? You're going to hold a convention and do experiments that actually prove that the Earth is round, but you're going to insist that they went wrong. But QAnon allows this kind of opportunity for action. It lets people feel like they're contributing to making the world better, what they think would be better. And so within the conspiracy theory itself and this big like umbrella network of all the other conspiracy theories that it incorporates, one of the hallmarks of Q is that they post these cryptic messages and say that you're supposed to do investigation yourself. And so that already encourages more of an active participation in this conspiracy theory than some of the others that you see floating around. There's nothing you can do about people being lizard people, you know? But you investigate, you accuse people, you can dox them. You can try to ruin people's lives on the internet. And then as you kind of get further into this, you see that in some cases, there are QAnon adherents who are actually going and perpetrating acts of domestic terrorism themselves to help Trump out, for example. I think there was an incident a couple years ago at the Hoover Dam that had to do with this, for example.
So what about, because one of the reasons it's coming to light, and certainly what I would say is kind of the scariest thing about it, and what makes it, in my opinion, even worse than McCarthyism, because for all my distaste and dislike of McCarthyism, and Joe McCarthy himself was an abject scuzzball and a very evil man. Unfortunately, though, it is not debatable that some of his assertions were right. That, yes, there was a Cold War going on, and a lot of it dealt with espionage. He's been proved right about some of these things after the Cold War ended. You don't need to say that his methods were acceptable just because, yes, he was right, communists were trying to influence America. Sure, great, that doesn't mean you get to throw the Constitution out the window. But, you know, at least there was something tangible there. So when you see these this America First nationalism rear its head in the 50s and early 60s, you can kind of understand why it gained traction, because, yeah, it was big and it was scary that, you know, the USSR was... I mean, actually, it was literally a James Bond supervillain, if you've read the James Bond books, but it also kind of had that mystique to it, and it was a justified mystique. But with QAnon, you have a similar phenomenon, except there's no justified basis for it, right? You don't have this big, bad, tangible enemy with political borders whose leader goes to the UN and bangs a shoe like a gavel. You just have these shadowy so-called cabal of evildoers. And yet it seems we're seeing QAnon really have a tangible political influence. I mean, and you mentioned the alt-right, and this kind of intersects with stuff we've talked about in the podcast before about the dangers of this new nationalist movement and this attempt to whitewash a term that really can't be whitewashed in terms of how evil it is and antisocial it is and awful it is. But like Joe Perkins, the Republican Senate candidate in Oregon, she specifically said, "I stand with President Trump. I stand with Q and the team. Thank you, Anons, and thank you, Patriots. Together we can save our republic." And then she tweeted a video of her taking a QAnon-related oath at QAnon's request. This is an actual political candidate. There's a Georgia congressional candidate who's doing the same thing, Taylor Greene. She said in a video, quote, "There's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take this global cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles out, and I think we have the president to do it," end quote. Fortunately, she went on to say some really racist and anti-Semitic things, and fortunately, numerous Republicans were like, "Can we disown this? This is awful. She's absolutely insane." But even when that happened, you know, one of Trump's campaign staffers got involved and said, "You should be condemning the Steele dossier and conspiracy theories promoted by the Democrats. Why are you going after QAnon?" Which I think speaks to that in-group dynamic you were talking about earlier. The entire idea is, well, QAnon may be a bunch of psychotic, rabble-rousing psychopaths, but there are psychotic, rabble-rousing psychopaths. Lauren Boebert, Yeah, she's the incumbent for Colorado, in one of the Colorado congressional chairs, who kind of said she liked them, but then distanced herself from them. There's an entire list of QAnon-related candidates. And why do you think QAnon is getting actual support from candidates? Because we've seen, you know, people on both the right and the left, especially as congressional and senatorial candidates are getting younger. They're millennials now, or some of them, so they understand what memes are, and they reference memes, and that's all well and good. But it seems there's a difference between someone jokingly tweeting Epstein didn't kill himself and coming out and saying, I stand with QAnon. Why do you think QAnon's getting such a foothold in actual tangible political movements and actual tangible political campaigns?
So, to an extent, I think I'm going to tread some tired ground here, but I think that really, like, Donald Trump is a major contributor to why this has such staying power and is becoming more mainstream. In the very immediate past, we've seen him tweeting multiple times, like retweeting, like, QAnon-related alt-right tweets, right?
Yeah.
And kind of encouraging this white nationalism that is maybe separate, maybe related. He actively is encouraging stuff in this kind of circle of just alt-right stuff. And in fact, I want to note that I think it was the day after she announced her candidacy, that candidate from Georgia that you mentioned was the QAnon supporting candidate, was immediately endorsed by Trump. And I think this was with the knowledge that she was a QAnon supporter. And so present day, he's encouraging it. But I think we can go back to 2015, 2016, with Trump's candidacy and his ability to secure the nomination just by being ridiculous, inflammatory, and divisive. And we see that there was appeal there. People liked that he was being racist, that he was being bigoted. And once he won the nomination, the rest of the Republican Party kind of jumped on board, like, yeah, this is our guy, right? And then we see some people in the Republican Party further committing. Some of them might be serious because they've been exposed to these ideas and are like, this makes sense. And some of them, I'm sure some of them are just posturing, trying to echo the sort of rhetoric and cult of personality that surrounds Trump to get those same supporters. And so I think it started as kind of a political gambit that people realized actually works. And so you find people who say the same sort of things and act the same sort of way as Trump. That's kind of why this has staying power within actual, like, national politics, I think.
I mean, not to retread tired ground myself, and I know we've talked about this one-on-one for years at this point, but to me, one of the things that really seems to drive this is authoritarianism. And whether you talk left-wing or right-wing authoritarianism, and it seems, I would say it, I hope it seems clear, there is authoritarianism on both sides of the political spectrum, whatever Bob Altmaier might have to say about hen's teeth. But both really like to have I'm going to use the word unrighteous, even though I don't think the left-wing would like that term. I don't think left-wing authoritarianism would really use the term unrighteous, but it's the same basic concept of having this unrighteous evil. We are the righteous, they are the unrighteous, unite behind us, and we will defeat the evil. And I think that's really, really at play in why things like QAnon have such staying power. And I'm not going to say there aren't equally absurd conspiracy theories from the left. I think especially when you look at the politics behind, say, anti-vaccine conspiracies, I think you see a lot of this on both sides of the political aisle, and a lot of left-wing conspiracies dealing with, you know, oh, they're it's the billionaires trying to screw us over. Bill Gates wants to inject us with microchips, which definitely was not a fun thing to flash through my mind when I was getting tested for COVID a week and a half ago, but there you are. But with specifically QAnon, and that would mean it would be right-wing authoritarianism, because as you correctly say, it's an alt-right movement. It has all the anti-Semitism, anti-immigrant, anti-African-American perspectives of an alt-right movement. I think it serves as a more useful rallying point because, to me at least, and you can feel free to disagree, the tired old, the left is the enemy and is evil, it was getting tired, it was getting old, and it doesn't even necessarily really even work that well anymore. The same way I don't think a lot of people on the left wing really want to hear about how the right and anyone even slightly right of center is the Antichrist. I think we're all getting very tired of that. So here comes QAnon that gets to create this even more appalling, atrocious figure that's politically expedient to use as a scapegoat and say, hey, we're not just fighting the Democrats anymore, and insert your favorite slur for anyone of a liberal persuasion. We're fighting demon pedophiles. We're fighting satanic pedophiles. Sure, and any rational person would say, okay, if they exist, I certainly wouldn't be for them. And I think that helps spin the authoritarian narrative behind a lot of Trump's support. And he can try to distance himself from people like Richard Spencer, who admittedly did just endorse Biden, all he wants. The nice thing is that Biden's campaign immediately came out and said, screw you, Richard Spencer. Trump didn't. And so that would be my, admittedly not really directly related to conspiracy theory literature, hypothesis of why QAnon gets the ground that it does.
I'd say that's definitely an interesting point. There is some evidence to suggest that authoritarianism and conspiracy theories there is some overlap there. So you see, again, in particular, this kind of groupthink involved in both of these constructs, right? So it's the supremacy of the in-group, and we're the good guys, and these other people are the bad guys, and they need to be punished for it, and they're the reason that we have problems. So broad strokes, there are some similarities there. You did mention right versus left-wing authoritarianism, and I agree with you that there are authoritarians on the left and the right, as you know, since that's some of the research we're both interested in. But related to that, we've devoted a lot of time to these alt-right conspiracy theories in this conversation, and particularly QAnon. But I think it is important to note that conspiracy theories are not a right-wing phenomenon. There are people on both sides of the political spectrum who endorse conspiracy theories. They may be different. You've got birtherism on one hand, and then you've got various reasons for being an anti-vaxxer on the other hand. That's related to, you know, big business. And big business is a focus of a lot of these more left conspiracy theories, I would say. Or some of the 9/11 conspiracy theories, I think, started on the left. That's actually one of the predictors, is being on the losing side of an election. You'll see election-related conspiracy theories. Whoever lost, it was because it was rigged. That's not going to happen every time, but I think you've seen that. I think we've seen that with a little bit more frequency this century. So being on the losing side of an election and being on the extremes politically both predict conspiracy theory endorsement. So that includes extreme left. It's not just the extreme alt-right. I think that we devote a lot more attention to these right-wing conspiracy theories. And I think there are some of them that are particularly dangerous on the right, like QAnon. But they do exist on both sides of the spectrum.
The last serious question I have for you, and this deals directly with your research, I know you're working on this for your master's thesis right now, and that is, how do we fix conspiracy theories? What do concrete strategies look like? Because, again, QAnon's made some predictions that just didn't hold up, but looking at more to my area of the psychology of religion, we know that in religious cults, this happens all the time, and this is a connection that's even been drawn with QAnon, as it has a lot of the tendencies of a religious cult. You know, there are so many cults across religions that have made apocalyptic predictions. The world will end on such and such a date. Of course, it never does. And yet people stay in the cult. This is why Scientology is a thing. And so it can't just be disproving the theory or the claims of a conspiracy theory that works. So what tangible steps need to be taken to address conspiracy theories like QAnon that threaten, I would say, the functioning of a free society, to say nothing of just individual functioning as a human being seeking to flourish?
So that's a difficult question, because conspiracy theories are kind of a worldview, right? People absorb these conspiracy theories. They tend to engage in something called monological thinking. And this is in contrast to dialogical thinking, which is where you engage in a dialogue with other points of view, other perspectives. Monological thinking is where people, everything is attributable to their like pet conspiracy theory. Every bad thing that happens is because of the Jews, is because of the government, etc. And so that's difficult. As far as long-term solutions, the main one is education. There are lots of predictors associated with belief in conspiracy theories that are mitigated by education, like the ability to think analytically or critically. If people are measured as lower on that ability, then they tend to also be more likely to endorse conspiracy theories, for example. And then we see that people who are more educated, who hold more advanced degrees, are less likely to endorse conspiracy theories. And so long term, I think it's really like societal level education is what you need for decreased endorsement. But this is not a solution that's going to be implemented quickly or easily. We all have heard all sorts of criticisms about the education system in America and how it doesn't teach critical thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's like end game, I think, is improving education so that people have the tools to accurately process these kinds of arguments. So I would consider my research more of a stopgap measure, I guess, because we don't have the large scale tools to deal with these kind of antecedents to conspiracy thinking. And so there's been a little bit of other research looking into this question. And in particular, some of what we've seen is that you can kind of tell people this is wrong, and this is the fallacious reasoning that was used in this conspiracy theory. And so that's why this is wrong. Or these people are motivated to promote this conspiracy theory because of this reason. And you show that they're not a reliable source. And so that kind of works. There have only been a handful of studies on this. There's one done back in 2014 where they made people slow down and think more carefully, and then showed after that that they were less likely to say that they believed in conspiracy theories. And so that kind of bolsters the claim that actually getting people to think and giving them the tools to think is going to be helpful in decreasing belief in conspiracy theories. But in the meantime, what I'm working on is the idea that conspiracy theories are also a form of misinformation. And so it's not just them and this class all of their own, but they're kind of like other types of information that just isn't quite right. They're a little bit worse, I would say, for some of the reasons we've talked about. But that's how people are that's what I see is how people are acquiring some of these conspiracy theories in the current day. You know, they read Trump's tweets and he's endorsing this conspiracy theory and they're like, well, this guy knows what he's talking about, right? And so they just kind of absorb that information. And if you can reach people who have just kind of absorbed the information without thinking about it, but aren't like incredibly invested yet, I think you can apply some of these techniques like, hey, this is what the fact checkers say, or this is what's wrong with their reasoning, and or these people have a motivation to make you think something that's wrong. And I think that could help mitigate at least some of these conspiracy theories that we see floating around.
Good stuff. I certainly hope it all turns out and you can hopefully solve this problem of conspiracy theories before QAnon kills us all or something. Anyway, Murray, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast and talking more about the science behind all this stuff, especially with QAnon.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Well, if you have any thoughts, feelings, comments, opinions, feel free to reach out to us at facebook.com/libertysnark or shoot us an email at contact@libertysnarkpodcast.com. We'll be back next week. Take care, guys. This has been Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Snarkiness. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a share on social media or leaving us a review on your podcasting platform of choice. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at facebook.com/libertysnark or send us an email at contact@libertysnarkpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening.